Have any of you been reading this book? Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Yeah. A few years ago, yes. Life is about asking questions, isn't it? Sometimes you see your friend here at the manor, you say, "Oh, how are you?" Question. You say, "How's the wife? How are the children?" And they'll say to you, "Oh, very well. And how are you? And how is this? And how is that? And how's the job?" And, you know, etc., etc. It's all about answers, questions and answers. But generally speaking, we don't ask the right questions. Of course, we think we ask the right questions, otherwise we wouldn't be asking them. Sometimes a little later on we say, "Oh, is prasadam being served?" That's an important question because we're hungry. Or sometimes we want to go to the temple and we say, "Is the car fixed?" Or we say, "Is the tank full?" Or we have a friend, we say, "Are you coming to the temple today?" So some questions are beneficial. Some questions we have to ask. Some questions we have to ask just for our day-to-day maintenance. But some questions are regretfully quite rare. But they're the most important questions. And that's why this book is called Perfect Questions and Perfect Answers. Because rarely do we ask the perfect question. Has anybody here ever asked the perfect question? What's that? How do we justify what is the perfect? Well, what's the perfect question to you? What's your perfect question? Anyone here got a perfect question? What is the purpose of life? That's a very good question.
Very good question.
What's the purpose of life? Yes. So then we ask, what is life? Sometimes one question leads to another question. That's a very good question. There's a clue in the Vedic literatures. Atata brahma jignasa. Now, in the human form of life, it is time to inquire into the nature of the self. Who am I? What is life? What is life? Who am I? What is life? Who am I? What is life? Who am I? The two are inseparable. I live my life. I live my life, so what is my life? Who is my? You can't separate the two. So sometimes during our life, we do ask a question like that. We ask a serious question. And usually, or very often, unless we're of a very pious nature or intelligent, sometimes it's some circumstances which... Sometimes tragic circumstances which push us into asking the question. Sometimes a very close friend or a family member passes away. And suddenly we're confronted with the mortality of our existence. Mortality. Oh, they've gone. Oh. Why am I here? And where have I come from? And where am I going? So these are good questions. It's not as if we say, oh, where have I come from? Oh, I came from Bethnal Green. Or Harrow. No, we're not talking about that kind of coming from. Where am I going to? I've got a holiday next month and I'm going to the Canary Islands. We're not talking about that kind of where am I going to. And when I say, who am I? We're not talking about, I've got a nice job in a bank. I'm earning some very good money, thank you very much. And I'm a married man, I have 16 children. Of course, these days that's not very likely, but maybe 6 children. So when we say, who am I, it's not in terms of the role we play. We have so many roles in our life, don't we? We have students. Well, sometimes, first of all, we're a baby. We're not even aware who we are, where we've come from, where we're going. We just see mummy. And then a few months goes by, then there's daddy. And then there's perhaps your brothers and sisters, and you you're getting older, and your sense of me becomes prominent. Me and mine. That's my toy. That's my food. That's my plate. My, me, mine. I, my, me, men. So our roles differ as the life goes on. Maybe child, youth, and then we get a job, and we define ourselves in terms of our job. We define ourselves in terms of the role we play in the family. But of course, when we talk about me, this isn't the role this isn't the me we're talking about, because these are all changeable. We can change our job, we can change our religion, change our beliefs. These days you can even change your sex if you want to. So everything to do with the body is changing. The body itself is changing. But the real me, as we understand from the Vedic scriptures, and as you will understand having come here, many of you, for many, many years, is that the real identity is the soul. So it's not as if many of us were hearing anything new. Are any first timers here today? Any funds come for the first time here today? Any first time? No. Okay. So sometimes these evening classes, it's not as if you're going to hear anything new. But sometimes an important thing needs to be repeated over and over again. Needs to be repeated for it to sink in. And not just that, but also every person who sits down here and speaks of an evening, every individual has a slightly different angle on things, expresses things perhaps in a slightly different way. And if we listen well, we can also learn how to express this philosophy to others. We can also learn how to present this philosophy to others. We might learn a new sloka from the Bhagavad Gita. Oh, that's a good verse to mention when making this point. Or we may learn a particular angle, a particular way of thinking, how to present something. This evening I doubt whether you'll learn anything new. It's more for my benefit than for your benefit. But this final chapter here in this very nice book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, it was an exchange that took place between Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the Krishna Consciousness Movement in the West, and a young man, Bob Cohen, who was an American. He was working for the Peace Corps, which was an American organization involved with various charitable works around the world. This final conversation takes place in New York, although originally Bob Cohen met Srila Prabhupada in India. He went on a spiritual search in India and was very fortunate. He met His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And some conversation has taken place in India. Of course, there's quite a few chapters here. And there also was an exchange of letters. And the final chapter is the summary, as it were. So with your permission, I'd like to read a few lines from this. Some very nice points Prabhupada is making. This is Prabhupada speaking directly to an inquirer who had some perfect questions. Prabhupada says, oh, first of all, Bob says, I received your very kind letter about a week ago. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of that letter. But Srila Prabhupada says, you are a very intelligent boy. Try to understand this philosophy. It is very important. People are wasting so much energy for sense gratification. They are not aware of what is going to happen in the next life. There is a next life, but foolish people are ignorant. This life is a preparation for the next life. That they do not know. The modern education and its universities are completely in darkness about this simple knowledge. How many of you learnt about the transmigration of the soul when you went to school or university? Are there any university students here? College graduates? One, two, three? Three? Is that it? Three? But you all went to school, I'm sure. How many of you went to school in the West? How many of you went to school in India? Okay. How many went to school at all? How many didn't go to school? Okay. One or two of you, perhaps. Nothing to be ashamed of. Okay. Well, my math says that a lot of you haven't put your hands up, so I'll assume that you're probably very well educated, and you're thinking, well, why on earth is he asking if we went to school, if we went to a university? You're probably thinking, well, why is he asking that question? Well, the point is, Prabhupada's given the clue here. The modern education and its universities are completely in darkness about this simple knowledge. I mean, how many of us heard about the soul in school? Maybe did a bit of religious study, perhaps. But transmigration of the soul, the existence of the soul before this body, the existence of the soul after this body, no. We don't hear about that. Therefore, most of the time, our education is mostly just knowledge about the world around us and how to get a job, if that. So this darkness is ignorance of the soul. Ignorance of the soul and the soul's eternal relationship with the Supreme. Prabhupada is coming to that. Prabhupada says, we are changing our bodies every moment. That is a medical fact. Every moment. Has anybody noticed any changes in the body of the past month or two? That grey hair, ladies. Huh? Ooh, that grey hair. We don't like to see the grey hair. Even the men sometimes get all grey. Or wrinkles. Or that aching joint. You don't always see it, you feel it. Oh, ah, the back's going again. And it gets worse. It doesn't get better. It's, you know, it goes, and sometimes it's like that. So the body's changing. And medical science explains that every 7 years or so, we actually have a new body. Because all the cells have died, and within a 7 year cycle, all the cells have died and been replaced by new cells. And some have died off, and they don't come back again, like the brain cells. The brain cells, they generally speaking, they die, that's it. That's why as you get older, you forget things. There's not as many brain cells as you had when you were little. That's why when you're little, when you're young, a child can be multilingual. A small child, if it's brought up with several different languages, it will learn them all. But try learning several different languages. Try learning one language when you're past 25, 30. It can be a strain. Some people have a natural aptitude, admittedly. I don't. At all. But a young child with all his brain cells, in the circumstances of having to speak different languages, he can often learn 3 or 4 or 5 different languages, and just like that, pick them up very easily. In fact, the learning curve of a baby between birth and 6 or 7 years old is phenomenal. It isn't a miracle how much the child takes in and learns a whole language, and sometimes many languages. So our brains are deteriorating bit by bit. The body is changing. But the big change, of course, is actually when we have to leave the body behind, totally, at the point of what we call death. There is no death. The body dies because the soul leaves. The soul leaves. Let's go on to what Prabhupada says. After leaving this body, we will have to accept another body. How are we going to accept that body? What kind of body? What kind of body? This was a couple of devotees were here recently. Chamsunda Prabhu and Gurudas Prabhu, who were the first devotees who came over here to the West from America. They founded the temple in London. They did so much preaching. They started Srila Prabhupada's mission here in the UK. And they were here recently for the 40th anniversary of the installation of Radha Londoneshwara in the deities in London. Did any of you see Gurudas and Chamsunda and Malati Yamuna when they were here? Any of you see that? Very brave souls. They came over here in their early 20s with nothing. And within a couple of years, they'd started the whole Krishna movement. Within 3 or 4 years, they had the manor, a kind donation by George Harrison. And they were reminiscing about their preaching, their early preaching days here in the UK. And Gurudas said he recently went to see... it sounds like I'm name-dropping. I'm not really name-dropping. He went to see a member of the Beatles, you know, the Beatles band. I'm sure some of you heard of the Beatles. Some of you are quite fond of their music, perhaps. He went to see one of the members of the Beatles, because there's only two left. So either Ringo or Paul. Okay, I'll tell you it was Ringo. And he was saying that many years ago, they were talking, when they were, Shamsundar and Gurudas were preaching to many of the people in the entertainment industry, who used to preach to not just those people in the Beatles, but many people. Many people were very influential. Quite a few people gave money to help found the temple in London. Mick Jagger gave quite a substantial amount of money for a big metal beam that was supporting the temple when they knocked out a wall there in Berry Place. Anyway, that's neither than there. Gurudas was saying how when he spoke about reincarnation, Ringo said, "Well, I'd like to come back as a cat." And Gurudas said, "Well, why? Why would you come back as a cat?" And Ringo said, "Well, I like cats. I like cats," he'd say in his thick Liverpool accent. And some people think like this. "Oh, I'd like to come back as a dog." But an intelligent person actually doesn't want to come back. Doesn't want to come back. We've already come back. Here we are again. How many times have we come back? Not once, twice, not 30, not 100. Not 10,000, not a million, not a billion, not a quadrillion, not a trillion. It is limitless how many times we've been coming back. This is the realm of Maya, the big illusion. And we've been taking birth in this material realm since, I'm going to say, the beginning. There is no beginning. The whole material universe is coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. There's no point in time when we can say the soul took birth for the first time in the material world. We've been through it all. We have been here so many times, it's beyond our imagination. It is beyond our conception. And here we are again. Here we are again. We suffered birth. Birth is painful. Those ladies who have children, giving birth is painful. I'm sure you'll testify to that. And what's the first thing that the baby does when he comes out? He's screaming. He's screaming. Birth is painful. And then, of course, there's disease. Whether it's disease or aches and pains, some people have terrible diseases. Then there's old age creeps on, and then there's finally death. But these, birth, old age, disease, and death, this is what happens to the body. Not to me. It doesn't happen to me. I'm not born, it's the body's born. I don't get diseased, the body gets diseased. I don't suffer from old age, the body gets older. And death, it's not me that dies, it's the body that dies because I leave. But because we're in the bodily conception of life, and because we think of ourselves in terms of our body, in terms of our race, in terms of our religion, in terms of our culture, in terms of our job, in terms of our family, in terms of so many things, when the body suffers, we suffer. And the body does suffer. And yet, we're investing all our energy in maintaining and making plans for the body and everything connected with the body. Yet, when it comes to our real self, we have no real plans. We're not making plans for our real welfare. During the course of the week, how many hours do we put aside for the necessity of eating. How long is how many hours? How many hours during the course of the week do we put aside for sleeping? The body has needs, certainly. It's just like how many of you came here in a car? All of you, I'm sure. I came in a bicycle, but anyway, that's something else. None of you walked. We all came in a car, or a bus, or whatever. Most of you come by car. So, in order to come by car, you have to maintain your car. Obviously, you've got to put fuel in it, you've got to make sure there's oil in it, you've got to have the engines running nicely. So that's important, but it isn't the be-all and end-all. Because if the car is in perfect order, but you yourself, you got flu, or you're sick, or you're not looking after your health, if you're ignoring yourself at the expense, if you're looking after the car at the expense of your own health and well-being, then such a person would generally be considered very foolish, is it not? Imagine someone's got, the car is perfect, but the man hasn't changed his clothes for 6 months. He hasn't had a bath. He doesn't eat properly. He's mad. But we're in that category. We're actually mad. We're looking after this car. We feed it. We clean it. We clothe it. We dress it. We look after it so nicely, but we don't feed our very self. We don't cleanse our very self. In fact, we barely know who our self is. We need someone else to tell us who we are. Now, there's nothing shameful in that. To be in ignorance and want to know the truth is very laudable. But to be in ignorance and want to stay in ignorance, that's very foolish. Very foolish. So the fact that you're all here today, and many of you come every Sunday, many of you come more than once a week, it shows, of course, that you have an interest in your real self. You have an interest in your real welfare, and the real welfare of your family members and your dependents. This is the responsibility, to look after our real welfare. So let us go back to what Srila Prabhupada is saying. Very interesting, don't you think? This little conversation, very short sentences, Prabhupada saying very succinctly these basic points worthy of meditation. Srila Prabhupada, what's the word? Shooting the breeze. Frivolous conversation, chit-chat. You never find Prabhupada shooting the breeze. He's always saying something which is directly relevant to the eternal nature of the self, looking after the welfare, not just of his disciples and well-wishers, but the whole of society. Srila Prabhupada wasn't trying to carve a little niche for himself, a nice room to stay in, some followers, some wealth, some adoration, some distinction. No, Srila Prabhupada was working selflessly, tirelessly, traveling all the time around the world, taking risks, risking his life to preach this Krishna consciousness all around the planet, everywhere. So Prabhupada is saying, after leaving this body, we will have to accept another body. How are we going to accept that body? What kind of body? This can also be known. For example, if someone is being educated, one can understand that when he passes his examination, he's going to be an engineer or medical practitioner. Similarly, in this life, you can prepare yourself to become something in the next life. So this is good news. We're not playing roulette here. You can actually plan things in such a way that you can plan your next life. This is called long-term planning. Then Barbara, who's Bob's wife, she asks, can we decide what we want to be in the next life? Srila Prabhupada, yes, you can decide. We have decided that in the next life, we are going to Krishna. is our decision to go back home, back to Godhead. Suppose you decide that you're going to be an engineer or a medical practitioner. With that objective, you prepare and educate yourself. Similarly, you can decide what you're going to do in the next life. But if you don't decide, then the material nature will decide. Barbara, could I have been Krishna conscious in my last life? Is it possible that in my last life I was a Krishna devotee and have come back again? Srila Prabhupada, it does not matter, but you can become a Krishna devotee now. Take advantage of our Krishna consciousness movement. When one is perfectly Krishna conscious, he does not come back. But if there is a little deficiency, then there is a possibility of coming back. But even though there is a deficiency, he comes back to a nice family. Shuchinam shimatam gehe yoga brashto bijayate. The unsuccessful yogi takes birth in a religious or aristocratic family. So human intelligence can decide for the future. An animal cannot. We have discriminatory power. If I do this, I will be benefited. If I do that, I will not be benefited. This power is there in human life. So you have to use it properly. You should know what is the goal of life and decide in that way. That is human civilization. That is human civilization. That reminds me of something that Mohandas Gandhi once said. Gandhi is a great hero in many quarters in India because he fought for Indian independence. And one time he was asked, what do you think of Western civilization? And he said, I think that would be a good idea. Implying, of course, that the West isn't civilized, which actually it isn't. We're not living in a civilized country. Any culture which ignores the nature of the self, which doesn't encourage the realization of the soul, it isn't a very high grade of civilization. We may have microphones, we may have motor cars, we may have atomic bombs, iPhones, Xboxes, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. That's what fills our days. Have you fill in the dots? Do you have you seen, have you heard? Goes on and on and on. And we clutter our existence up with all these peripheral distractions, actually. We've heard recently of weapons of mass destruction, which is very scandalous, but we won't comment extensively on that. But we are surrounded by weapons of mass destruction. And whose weapons are those? Those are the weapons of the material energy to distract us from our real goal, which is, who am I? What is life? Where have I come from? Where am I going to? And as the picture gets bigger, we can see the enormity of the issues at stake. And if we're sincere, if we're truly asking the questions from the depth of our being, we'll ultimately come to the conclusion, actually, I belong to God. Everything belongs to God. Everything is Krishna's. I am Krishna's. And actually I'm a rascal. Because I've been ignoring Krishna for billions upon billions of lifetimes. And what is the result? I'm simply in anxiety. I'm simply suffering. And our suffering might be mental suffering, emotional suffering, aches and pains, some family problems. But look elsewhere and see how other people are suffering. Far, far more than you and I. which just happened in Haiti. My gosh. That's the nature of the material world. Sometimes it's a tidal wave, sometimes it's a hurricane, sometimes it's the government, sometimes it's a bomb, sometimes it's your neighbor, sometimes it's a relative. But always it's the infliction of pains and suffering on the body and the mind. Sometimes there's nothing wrong with the body, but we're in total anxiety. Sometimes we're sweating. Sometimes our body is feeling palpitations of the heart, all because of some emotional or mental suffering that we're going through. The present age we live in is a very distracting and destructive age. Age of Kali. And things need to be simple. Life is complicated, and we're not very well equipped with longevity or deep intelligence. We can't focus for very long length of time. Meditation is not easy. Therefore, the Vedic scriptures recommend, not just recommend, emphatically say that in the age of Kali, there's no way to attain freedom from birth and death. There's no way to attain love of God except by the chanting of the holy names of God. So that's why we're always chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna with the bead bag. Hare Krishna with the kirtan. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. By associating with Krishna in his name, by associating with the spiritual energy in the form of the holy name, Krishna Prasadam, Bhagavad Gita, devotional service, whether it's in the temple or outside the temple, you can have a little altar at home, off your food, by associating with spiritual energy, we can reawaken our spiritual consciousness. Just like before even the sun is up, the whole sky is lit up with the rays of the sun. Even before the sun has actually risen above the horizon, the whole sky is lit up. Well, you can see where you're going. So even before we actually awaken our dormant Krishna consciousness, the process is shedding light on our existence. And not just our own existence. Others will benefit from our own enlightened vision. Our priorities become clear. Our path becomes clear. Our decisions become clear. And by applying the process of Krishna consciousness, gradually, we can awaken our love for Krishna and realize who we really are. Eternal loving servants of the Supreme Lord. And then our future becomes very secure. We become impervious to the problems of the material world. Because we do have responsibilities. But at one point we are going to leave. Whether we leave via a tidal wave, an earthquake, an asteroid, an atomic bomb, a terrorist explosion, or just plain and simple in our bed at night, sound asleep, one way we're going to leave. So the best preparation for our future is to become immerse ourselves in the spiritual path. More and more, chanting Krishna's name. And then at the point of leaving, we stand a good chance of remembering Krishna's name. For one who chants Krishna's name at the point of leaving the body, his future is very bright. His success is guaranteed. But that's not easy. Not easy. Because death is very traumatic. But if we can somehow or other remember Krishna's name at the point of leaving, then our success is assured. So, time for a few questions. Perfect questions, perfect answers. Any questions? I can't guarantee perfect answers, but any questions?